saving money on your interior stains and finishes now at Menards. Provide exceptional color to your staining project with Minwax Color Series. It applies evenly and dries fast with just one coat. Get a quart of Minwax Color Series wood stain in over 240 colors. On sale now through April 12th. Visit our paint desk and let our helpful team get you everything you need for your stain project today. Save big money
at the Hello and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Crime with Holly. It's your girl, Holly, and I am back today with another murder case for you all. This case is a wild one, and quite frankly, it makes me so angry. I will say, though, that there isn't a ton of information about the victim's early life, and that is unfortunate because I always like to present you guys with all of the details of the person so that you can get a better understanding and a better sense of who they were. But I'm going to try and do my best because she seemed like such a sweet and loving person. I don't have any case updates for you guys at this time. However, we need to sound the alarms because we've got a brand new Patreon member in the house. Welcome, Karen, to the inner circle, the little true crime fam of mine. Karen just unlocked ad-free episodes because interruptions should be criminal. But seriously, Karen, thank you so much for making my week and supporting the show. If you guys want to be like Karen, you can join the Patreon for just $2 a month by visiting www.patreon.com/crimewithholly. For $2 a month, you get every single episode. That's all of my old episodes and all of the new ones going forward, ad-free. Thanks again, Karen. You rock. All right, guys, let's get into the details of today's case. Today's episode is on the murder of Christy Chen. As I mentioned, information about Christy is incredibly limited, which is so frustrating and so unfortunate because she clearly left an impression on the people who knew her. But through digging, I was able to piece together glimpses of who she was. And across the board, the people who crossed paths with Christy had nothing but kind things to say. Christy was an only child raised by two loving parents. She was originally born in China, but spent most of her life growing up in Memphis, Tennessee. And everything I found points to her being driven, motivated, and genuinely warm. Her friend Presley was quoted saying that Christy was the sun and she brought so much joy. The kind of person who made others feel welcome the moment they met her. At some point in her life, Christy moved to Denver, Colorado, where she followed a passion and became a pastry chef. And not just any pastry chef, she opened her own bakery called Sweet As Pie. While researching, I came across a 2014 article from 303 Magazine written by Callie Sumlin that featured Christy's Bakery. And it just gave a really personal look into what Christy was trying to create. She said, quote, "I wanted it to feel like a classic Southern bakery where I could serve the Southern sweets I grew up on," end quote. And that's exactly what she did. Christy graduated from Johnson & Wales University's pastry program, where she mastered everything from artisan breads to elaborate sugar showpieces. But instead of focusing on high-end, overly complex desserts, she chose to bring comfort and nostalgia into her business. Her menu reflected the foods she grew up with, things like biscuits and gravy, cookies, scones, and even hummingbird cake. It wasn't just a bakery, it was a piece of her story. But even after building something like that, which seemed to be very successful, Christy wanted more. She made the decision to leave Denver behind and move back to Tennessee, where she completely shifted paths and went back to school. This time to become a pharmacist at the University of Tennessee. And true to who she was, she didn't just succeed, she excelled. Christy went on to become an award-winning pharmacist. In April of 2021, she received the Wolters Kluwer Clinical Drug Information Award of Excellence in Clinical Communications, an award given to graduates who demonstrate exceptional skill in both written and verbal communication. It's a detail that says a lot about her, because whether she was baking or working in medicine, Christy had a way of connecting with people, and that seems to be the thread that runs through everything she did. After graduating from the University of Tennessee, Christy began working as a pharmacist at Kroger in Memphis. And unfortunately, once again, details about this time of her life are limited. But based on everything we do know about Christy, her drive, her ambition, her ability to succeed at anything she set her mind to, it's safe to say that she was stepping into this new chapter and thriving. Then, in November 2021, Christy met a man named Bradley Dawson. And almost immediately, the two fell into what has been described as a whirlwind romance. Just like with Christy, there isn't a lot of publicly available information about Bradley's early life either. We don't know much about his childhood or who he was before this relationship. Some of his ex-girlfriends have since spoken out about their experiences with him, but we will get into that a little bit later. At the time Christy met Bradley, he was working in IT for a nonprofit organization called Youth Villages. It's actually a well-respected organization that works with children and young people across the United States, helping those facing emotional, mental, and behavioral challenges. Their goal is to strengthen families and support systems while improving long-term outcomes for the kids that they serve. By all accounts, it's an organization doing meaningful and impactful work, which makes what comes next feel even more jarring. Because despite working for a place dedicated to helping others, Bradley Dawson would go on to become the exact opposite of that mission. Now, exactly how Christy and Bradley met isn't entirely clear. That detail, like so many others, is missing. But what is clear is how fast everything moved. After just 3 months of knowing each other, they got married. And here's where things take a turn. During the entire time that Bradley and Christy were dating, and even while they were planning their wedding, Bradley was still legally married to someone else. His divorce wasn't finalized until January of 2022, and just 1 month later, in February, he married Christy. It's one of those details that immediately raises questions. Questions we may never get answers to, because his ex-wife has never publicly spoken about their relationship or what led to the end of their marriage. But it's hard not to wonder. Despite all of that, Christy and Bradley went forward with an intimate wedding ceremony, and the very next day, they hosted a reception at a historic James Lee house in Memphis. Close friends and family gathered to celebrate them, and for some of those guests, it was the very first time that they were meeting Bradley. Christy's friend Maurice later told People magazine that the engagement came as a complete shock. Everything had happened so quickly that it was difficult for anyone to really feel like they knew him. But one thing stood out above everything else. Christy was happy. And at the end of the day, that is what mattered most to the people who loved her. The couple married in February of 2022, and they began planning their honeymoon for July. This honeymoon was something that Christy was so incredibly excited for. On July 7th, 2022, Christy and Brad flew out to Turtle Island in Fiji. Turtle Island is a luxury private island resort, and it's best known for its exclusivity, natural beauty, and romantic castaway-style experience. Actually, the controversial movie The Blue Lagoon with Brooke Shields was filmed on Turtle Island. And if you don't know why that movie is controversial, just look it up and you'll find out all of the details. But when I say this place is bougie and luxurious, you guys, I mean it. Just Google Turtle Island and your mind will be blown by its beauty. From above, it looks like a dream, with emerald hills wrapped in powdery white sand, surrounded by water so blue it almost doesn't even look real. On the island is the one and only resort, nothing else. Those who are on the island are either living there because they work at the resort, or they're there visiting the exclusive resort. There are only 14 villas called burais on the entire island, and at any given time, no more than 28 guests are allowed to stay there. That means no crowds, no chaos, just silence and the sound of waves rolling onto the shore. The island has 12 private beaches, and guests are often assigned one beach all to themselves. Days on the island are spent snorkeling, kayaking, or riding horseback along the shoreline at sunset. Everything is all-inclusive, including something called a burai mama, which is a personal concierge that will look after you during your entire stay. She will make sure that you have everything that you could desire. She will unpack your bags that you bring, tidy up your villa, handles your laundry, and arranges your activities, and can even give guided island tours. And if you're wondering what a luxury stay like this costs, well, the most basic of basic packages cost $2,500 a night. And the top end of these packages runs around $5,000 a night. Not only that, but this resort has a minimum of a 5-night stay. So it's not like you can splurge and just go for one single night. No, no, you are out at the very least $12,500 to stay at this exclusive resort. And let me just say, I wish I could afford something this luxurious because it honestly looks like and sounds like an absolute dream. And that's exactly why Christy was so excited. This was her chance to unplug, to step away from reality and just soak in the sun with her husband in one of the most beautiful places in the world. But there are a few conflicting details when it comes to this trip. It doesn't appear that Christy had ever been to Fiji before. This was something new for her, something very special. Bradley, on the other hand, may not have been experiencing it for the first time. There are reports, though they are unconfirmed, but reports nonetheless, that he had previously been to Fiji. And even more specifically, that he had stayed at Turtle Island before with his first wife, possibly even for their wedding. Now, whether or not Christy knew that, if it's even true, we don't know. But if it is, it raises a question that's hard to ignore. Why go back to the exact same place with a new wife? It's strange, it's a little unsettling, and it doesn't sit quite right. Now, that's not to say you can't go and experience the same things with a different partner, but it just seems kind of strange in this situation with how expensive and luxurious this place was. It seems like that would be a once-in-a-lifetime kind of experience. Now, it's a little unsettling, especially when you factor in what one of his ex-girlfriends has since come forward to say. She said that Brad had a strange, almost obsessive fixation with Fiji. Everything that he talked about always revolved around Fiji, according to her. So as I said, on July 7th, Christy and Bradley arrived in Fiji, ready to begin what was supposed to be a romantic, once-in-a-lifetime honeymoon. A trip filled with beauty, luxury, and new memories. But instead, that dream vacation would come to an abrupt and devastating end. On Saturday, July 9th, 36-year-old Christy Chin and her 38-year-old husband, Bradley Dawson, were set to enjoy their third day at their luxury resort on Turtle Island. That morning, their Bure mama, the staff member assigned to care for their villa, noticed that the couple hadn't shown up for breakfast. But at the time, it didn't raise any concerns. After all, they were on vacation, sleeping in, taking it slow, maybe even recovering from a late night. None of that would have been out of the ordinary. She also noticed the Do Not Disturb sign hanging on the door of their villa. Again, nothing unusual. As the day went on, the couple also missed their scheduled lunch. Still, there were no alarm bells going off. On an island like this, guests come and go, exploring, relaxing, doing things on their own time. So eventually, she returned to the villa to begin cleaning. Despite the Do Not Disturb sign being still displayed, she went inside and started tidying up. At first, everything seemed normal. She picked up some pieces of clothing and put it on the bed. She made the bed. She did all of the things. She was moving through the space, picking up things, doing her normal routine. Nothing seemed out of place until something caught her eye. Out of the corner of her eye, she noticed something through the slats of the louvered bathroom door that looked wrong. And as she got closer, she realized what she was seeing. It was Christy. Her lifeless body wedged between the wall and the toilet, and there was blood everywhere. And this probably won't come as a surprise, but Bradley was nowhere to be found. Resort staff immediately called authorities, who responded from a neighboring island. And just imagine this scene for a second. You're on this exclusive private resort in the beautiful Fiji. Couples are vacationing, celebrating, relaxing, and suddenly all of these police officers come because there is a dead woman and her husband is missing. Talk about utter chaos in a place that normally sees complete relaxation and calmness. When authorities entered the villa, they quickly realized something else. Brad hadn't just disappeared. He had taken his wallet, his passport, and left. But interestingly, the items that could track him and could trace his location, like his cell phone and smartwatch, were left behind, which already starts to tell a story. It would take more than a day, 36 hours before Bradley Dawson was finally found. Because Brad didn't just leave the villa, he fled the island entirely. Using a kayak, he paddled his way to a neighboring island, seemingly thinking that he could get away. But that plan didn't last long. A local man named Manoa spotted him on Sunday, July 10th, sometime around 3 p.m., and Brad stood out immediately. This island he fled to wasn't a tourist island, so seeing a man like him, alone, stumbling towards the village, wasn't normal. Manoa later described him as disoriented, intoxicated, so much so that he could smell the alcohol on him. Brad also had visible injuries, bruising and cuts to his hands and arms. At the time, Manoa assumed that he had hurt himself somehow navigating the terrain to his island. But what Brad was saying is what made things unsettling. He kept repeating that he and his wife had gotten into a fight and that he needed to call the police. It didn't make sense. Nothing about this situation made sense. So Manoah tried to calm him down to get him to explain what happened, and eventually Brad did. He admitted that after a fight with his wife, he had taken a kayak in the early morning hours and fled to the island. Not long after, the authorities arrived, took Bradley into custody, and transported him back where he was formally charged with Christie's murder. And when they searched him, they found more than his belongings. Yes, he had his wallet, his passport, his credit cards, but he also had Christie's driver's license, her credit cards, and nearly $1,100 in cash, which raises a question that's hard to ignore. Because if this was just a fight, why take all of that with you? As investigators dug deeper, they began piecing together what they believe actually happened that night. According to sources, on the night of July 8th, the resort was hosting what they called a family fun night. And despite the name, it was essentially one big party. There was drinking, dancing, music, a full night of celebration. Both Christie and Brad were there, and by most accounts, both had been drinking. At the start of the night, everything seemed fine, normal, but at some point, that changed. Witnesses say Brad began dancing inappropriately with another woman, and understandably, that upset Christie. Multiple people recalled that you could visibly see the shift. Christie was angry, and the two began arguing. Eventually, they left the party, but the argument didn't end there. It followed them back to their villa. Guests staying nearby later reported hearing the couple yelling at each other, voices raised, tension escalating, and then a loud bang, followed by silence. One of those neighbors was concerned enough to report the disturbance to resort management, even filing a complaint about how loud things had gotten. But whatever happened next didn't stop what had already been set in motion. Around 2 a.m. on the morning of July 9th, a security officer on the island reported seeing a man walking toward the beach. He shined his flashlight and asked if everything was okay, and the man said that he was fine, just going for a walk. And that was it. No further questions, no follow-up. But looking back, that moment feels critical. Because it's believed that was when Brad made his way to the shoreline, got into a kayak, and disappeared into the night. Later, while in custody, Brad told authorities that he and Christie had been drinking heavily and got into an argument. He claimed that he didn't remember much, that he was so intoxicated that he just kind of blacked out. He said he remembered trying to hug her and that she became upset again, and according to him, she was the one who got physical first. And he said after that, he just lost it. But beyond that, he claims his memory is blank, conveniently, of course. Because according to Brad, the next thing he remembers, Christie was sitting near the toilet, bleeding from her head. And instead of calling for help, instead of trying to save her, he says that he just left. He grabbed a kayak and fled the island. Later, after obtaining an attorney, Brad began to walk back parts of his statement. He stopped cooperating altogether and introduced a new claim. That when he left the villa, Christie was still alive, which raises an even more disturbing question. Because if that were true, then he didn't just leave after violence, he left her there, injured, alone, with no help. When the news finally reached Christie's family that she was gone and that Brad was in custody, they were in complete shock. This wasn't a call that they ever imagined receiving. Their daughter had just left, excited, newly married, heading off to a dream honeymoon. How does that turn into tragedy in less than 48 hours? Their family attorney, Ronald Gordon, later said that when her parents first got that call, they actually thought that the call was a prank phone call. That's how unthinkable it was. And then reality sets in. Not only is your daughter gone, but she died at the hands of the man who promised to love her, promised to protect her and build a life with her. It's unimaginable. The medical examiner later determined that Christy died from blunt force trauma to the head. She had been struck repeatedly with the lid of the toilet. When authorities arrived, the back tank, also known as the cistern, was completely shattered. A level of violence that's hard to even process, and somehow it gets worse. When Christy's parents traveled to Fiji to bring their daughter home, they were told that her injuries were so severe that her body couldn't be embalmed, that there was too much trauma to her head. The embalming fluid wouldn't have held. It's almost impossible to wrap your mind around the extent of those injuries or the pain that she must have endured in her final moments. And because of that, her family had no choice. They had to cremate her just to bring her home to the United States. And now, with their world completely shattered, they were forced into a legal battle, one that would take place thousands of miles away, because this crime happened in Fiji. Everything would be handled there. And from the very beginning, Brad's defense made their position clear. They believed that he would be found not guilty. His attorney argued that this was all a tragic accident, that there was no intent, no premeditation, and that the prosecution didn't have enough evidence to convict him. But when you look at all of the facts, it tells a very different story. Because after Christy was killed, Brad didn't call for help. He didn't stay. He didn't try to save her himself. He grabbed his passport. He grabbed cash, her freaking credit cards, and he fled the island by kayak, paddling over a mile away, leaving behind anything that could track him. That doesn't look like confusion or innocence or someone that accidentally did something or she accidentally fell. That looks like someone trying to disappear. And prosecutors saw it the same way. So when Brad's defense pushed for bail, it was immediately met with resistance. Prosecutors and even the Chen family's attorney argued that he was an obvious flight risk. And honestly, how could you argue otherwise? Brad and his attorney claimed that he would stay on the island, surrender his passport, and live with a quote-unquote friend. But when the court looked into that claim, that friend turned out to be someone Brad had just met. Not a long-time connection, not someone reliable, just a random person he encountered after arriving. And just like that, that argument fell apart. Brad's attorney also tried to argue that little old Brad wasn't in good health, that he had been prescribed medications and needed access to a medical provider before taking them. Yeah, cool story, Brad. Nobody cares about your medical conditions. Maybe you should have thought of that when you were beating your wife with the lid of the toilet. The defense also didn't stop there. They argued that Brad had no prior criminal history and that his mother was fully dependent on him, that if he remained in custody, her mental health would suffer, and if he were granted bail, he could stay on the island, give her some phone calls to make sure that she was doing okay. And look, that is sad. It really is, because there is a ripple effect in cases like this. Families on all sides feel it. But Brad is not the victim in this story, and none of that changes what happened. Despite his confidence, so much so that he actually packed up his suitcase and took it to court expecting to be released, the judge denied bail, and he would remain in custody until his trial. And as with many cases, the legal process moved slowly. There was delays, hearings, motions, all of the things. It would take over 2 years before the trial even began. But during that time, Brad gave an exclusive interview to ABC News. In that interview, he claimed that the reason he left the villa that night was to, quote unquote, give her some space. That it was normal for him to go for a walk after an argument. And then he said this, quote, "What I can say is I am so sorry for the situation we are all going through now. We were supposed to have amazing holidays, and I lost my wife. Just thinking she is not here anymore is so painful. I am thinking of her all the time. We were supposed to have an amazing life," end quote. And that statement says a lot. Because even there, he frames it as something that just happened, that she just died accidentally, as if this was some tragic, unavoidable situation, not something that he himself caused. He also said that he was praying daily and that Chrissy was his everything. But those words don't line up with reality, Brad, and what happened inside that villa. And honestly, his entire quote just pisses me off. He makes himself sound like he's a victim in this situation, that someone else took his wife from him instead of him taking his own wife. In December of 2024, the trial finally began. After just 8 days of testimony, the jury returned a verdict. Guilty, thank God. The judge also didn't hold back what he thought about everything either. He made it very clear that the defense's version of events simply could not have been believed. At one point, the defense even suggested that Chrissy may have slipped and hit her head on the toilet, but the court didn't buy it. The judge stated that the prosecution's evidence and the witness testimony were credible, and that Brad was responsible. In February 2025, he was sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole after 18 years. And while that possibility exists, there is hope that he will never walk free again. Because at the very least, for the next 18 years, he will sit behind bars and finally face consequences for what he did. At the sentencing hearing, Chrissy's parents each stood up and spoke. Her mom said, quote, "I hope the memories of what you did to her in her last moments haunt you, because you are a monster. No mother should have to know this is how her daughter's life ended, and by the hands of the very person who took a vow to love, honor, and cherish her. I can only hope the rest of your life is filled with misery, loneliness, and despair," end quote. Chrissy's father said, quote, "She was my only child, my little girl, and my reason for living. Each day since her death has been a struggle to find meaning in life that now feels empty," end quote. And how incredibly tragic. I can't even begin to imagine the kind of pain her parents must carry, losing their only child, especially in a moment that was supposed to be one of the happiest times of her life, a honeymoon, a fresh start, the beginning of everything that she worked so hard for. And instead, it became the end. My heart truly goes out to them, and I hope in some way they've been able to find even the smallest sense of peace, knowing that Brad is now behind bars. Friends of Chrissy's have since spoken out saying she never mentioned any fighting, any violence, anything that would suggest trouble behind closed doors. And many of them were completely shocked because while they didn't know Brad well, he didn't seem like someone capable of something like this. And that's the terrifying reality. Sometimes we don't know. Sometimes the worst parts of a person don't show themselves right away. And a relationship that new, it's possible Chrissy never even had the chance to see that side of him. After everything happened, some of Brad's ex-girlfriends came forward. They described him as charming, easy to like, but they also said that when he drank, he became someone else entirely. someone unpredictable, someone who would black out and do things he later claimed not to remember. One ex described him as manipulative, jealous, and even threatening. She said that he had pushed her down before, and looking back now, those weren't just red flags, they were warning signs. Warnings that no one around Christy could fully see in time. And that's what makes this even harder to process. Because Christy didn't get her happily ever after. She didn't get the life she was building toward, the family that she may have dreamed of. Everything she worked for, everything she was excited for, was taken from her, and it didn't have to be. It's just an unnecessary loss. A life full of promise, gone far too soon. Crimesters, that is all that I have for this week's episode for you guys. Make sure that you are a part of my private Facebook group. In there, I share all information and pictures pertaining to the cases that I cover, and I also share all things true crime. If you'd like to follow me on Instagram, you can find me at Crimeaholly. And if you would like more true crime content, you can follow me on TikTok at crimewithholly.podcast. Thank you guys so much, and I will see you all next time. Until then, always remember to be aware and take care. Bye-bye.